You know what they say, four wheels move the body, but two wheels move the soul.
Poetry, mate.
But don't think my motorcycle or my soul will be moving anytime soon. Got a flat tire.
Ah, that's all right. You ride with Geico Motorcycle Insurance and got their 24/7 emergency roadside service. They'll get you back on the road.
Ah, beautiful saying. You come up with that?
It's not a saying. It's a Geico motorcycle policy.
Tomato, tomato.
It feels good to ride with help. It feels good to Geico. Emergency roadside service is optional coverage.
Aerovision, Ireland's number one Eurovision podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Fáilte ar ais ar Eurovision, lá idirnáisiúnta na mban honaí Eve Galair. Happy International Women's Day. This is, of course, a very special episode. We really hope you enjoy it. But there's someone missing today. I'm here alongside my lovely, beautiful co-host, Louise. Hello.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for that beautiful intro. It was so much fun. Yeah, it's just the girls today. Where's Connor? There's no Connor.
I don't know. It's a bit quiet around here, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, maybe it's because it's International Women's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Gals Day, guys.
Happy Gals. Today is for the gals and the gals of Eurovision.
It's for the gals of Eurovision. Can I just say, actually, this episode was Connor's idea, which I think is really sweet. We stand an ally. We love Connor. And Connor loves women, as he should. Happy International Women's Day, guys. This is a really special episode. We're going to get stuck into chatting all things women in Eurovision, celebrating cool women throughout the year, celebrating each other. And that's fun stuff to come. We have a really cool chat to come slightly later on. Alex, I feel like Eurovision 2025 is a year for the gals, right? This is my... Yeah. This is where my mind is going. What do you think about that statement?
It absolutely is. We have some incredible females on stage, behind the stage. Shout out to Larissa Tormey, who is one of the writers on our very own track, the only Irish artist on the Irish entry. So, yeah, there's some fantastic women showing in all parts of the competition and also obviously the fandom as well. So we'll be getting on some iconic women later on in the podcast. But yeah, overall, I think it is a year for the gals, isn't it?
Well, I mean, like, even in terms of young women, like, expressing themselves and, like, that more daring side, like, Erica Vickman, I love what she's doing. Marietta Conte in Malta.
Uh-huh.
Justice for our gal Mariana. Alex, we have not spoken about this yet. They are censoring our Mariana.
Oh my goodness. I mean, what a travesty. It currently does have like 7.5 million views on Eurovision's TikTok. I went through their TikTok the other day just out of curiosity because I'm like, she has been going so viral with that song. And it's in like the top 15 TikToks of all time Eurovision has put up. Like, she is doing crazy numbers and we haven't even had her on stage yet. So I'm really excited to see like what she changes. It's unfortunate, but I do think, like, you know, you do have to consider the fact it is an offensive word. And I think it's quite obvious that was a part of the joke, right? And they weren't hiding that. But you would have loved to see it because it's obviously a Maltese word. So they're entitled to use their own language, you would think. But I can also understand from the perspective of an English broadcaster or even another broadcaster, you know, not wanting to showcase that on prime time, one of their most watched TV shows by families and children. So, yeah, I kind of understand it, but I love Can't. That song is just so iconic. And I'm delighted that she is getting the reception online, right? And what a gal. I love how she commands the stage every second of it. And you know what? That word, Lou, and I think you'll agree with me on this, right? If it was maybe a man singing it, it might be different, but I really do love this. She's reclaiming the word that was used to hurt women. Like, this is something years ago that was nearly an unspeakable word and now has been reclaimed by the queer community, by the gays, the gals as like a hype, like you're hyping someone up with this word. So I do kind of love that it is a woman who has brought this song and is having fun with it, and it's in Maltese. So yeah, I love the song. How do you feel about the censorship of can't?
I mean, the boring logical part of my brain is like, it's not a broadcaster maybe being mean. It's literally like Ofcom in the UK. Like there's like all these regulations and fines, and you know, Eurovision technically begins pre-Watershed, so therefore, you know, certain words just cannot be said. Even if they are said after Watershed on the show begins pre-Watershed. So like they're in a rock and a hard place with that. But when it comes to that word, like if you call someone that word, if someone says, Lou, you are a whatever, like in my mind, that's like offensive, you know, in that context. But if someone says, Lou, you are serving today, I'd be like, yes, like, you know, it's context, isn't it? But listen, not everybody's as immersed to the pop culture as us, Alex. It's interesting the point you bring up about reclaiming a word, actually, because there was a lot of talk last year about Zora in Spain and how that was like a slur against like women and they're like expressing their sexuality and this kind of thing. And there was a lot of talk over it. The Prime Minister ended up like coming out and defending the song and saying like, no, like it's empowering. Like, so that like started a lot of discussion, which I think it's cool if a Eurovision song can do that, you know? Like,
yeah,
if you're going to go to Eurovision and not win, the next best thing is to like have people talking about you, you know? And to start it.
Yeah, 100%.
So
that's what it's all about, right? Is like all of the conversations that it creates, the political situations when they're good. Like, yeah, it can be a really great way, I suppose, to showcase talent and amazing women and reclaiming these things. So yeah, it's very exciting. And she's like, we make up 50% of the population, and we certainly show that in Eurovision. I know semi-final one is very male dominated actually this year, but I believe all the girls
really female dominated.
Yes, exactly. So that's going to be like International Women's Day Part 2 for the Euro fans. Can we rename it? But yeah, and we have obviously a female representative this year with Emmy, which is amazing. She's such a dote. And of course, amazing that the Irish songwriter is also female, as I mentioned. So yeah, it really is a year for the girls.
Larissa Tormey from Kilbeggan. I have lore to get into about her, but it's not for this episode. She's such a legend. I'm mad about her. But in conclusion, like in summary of this intro, Alex, we just think that women. I just think that women.
Yeah. Women, just women.
Just women. Women are great. Speaking of women being great, we have some fantastic friends at the podcast to speak to. Alicia, Michelle, everybody's famous. Famous? Famous, everybody's favourite American Eurovision YouTuber, such a legend. We also do shout out in this podcast that Alicia has her fantastic Ladies Choice panel every May coming up to the contest. Highly recommend everyone goes to her channel to check that out when it comes up. She always has a group of women on to chat about Eurovision that year, and it's always really fun. And of course, Katie Isles from Eurovision Hub. A great pal of the pod. She's actually been on the podcast briefly before when we were talking. I think it might be in one of our very early episodes, maybe the second or third. We were talking about the UK being about to host Eurovision, and Katie came on briefly to chat about Birmingham and their bid at the time. So great to have Katie back and to chat all things Eurovision, women in history in Eurovision, and kind of our place, I suppose, in the fan community. So, Alex, will we get stuck in?
Let's do it. So, hi, everyone. Welcome back. Falcha Arash, La Internacion Tanaman, Honayiv Galer. Happy International Women's Day. Today, we are joined by two very special guests, Alicia and Katie. Would you like to introduce yourselves? Is that okay?
Right, so I'm Katie, and I'm probably known in the Eurovision world for being one of the reactors on Eurovision Hub.
I'm Alicia Michelle, and people know me as that annoying American girl who just won't go away for some odd reason. Just, year after year. It's like she's back again.
That's actually incorrect. You're actually our favorite American Eurovision YouTuber. That's actually what I heard.
Well, it's good to know because I'm working hard. I'm trying.
You're hustling. We know our listeners are probably familiar with you both from different avenues, so we'll just dig a little bit deeper. Katie, I know that you have lots of interesting links with the Eurovision Song Contest, but Eurovision took place in your very own Birmingham in 1998, and you were there. Can you tell us about it?
I was. So, oh my God, it was a lifetime ago, though, to be honest. Eurovision was a very, very different thing in the 90s. That was actually my peak favourite time. But the show, as in, you know, how it takes over a city, how there's Euro Club, how there's like a week-long series of events, that just didn't happen. It literally was. The Friday was dress rehearsals, and then the Saturday was dress rehearsal and straight into the live. Birmingham, you wouldn't even have known Eurovision was there, apart from someone like me. And it was just absolutely amazing because even by 98, I'd been into Eurovision a very long time. So to get that happening in my home city was just amazing. And I went along with my mum. And I have to say that year was brilliant. And it probably is still my favourite UK entry with Imani, Where Are You? And, you know, I think any other year she would have won. So it was an amazing experience, although very, very different to my recent experiences of going to Eurovision. So, but yeah.
And then the UK hosted again in Liverpool. So you also went to that. So it must have been really weird, right?
I did. Yeah, that was just amazing because whilst I didn't go and spend the week in Liverpool, because I'm so close, you know, less than 2 hours away, I was literally like, I popped up on the Tuesday and then I popped up on the Thursday and then I went up for, where did I go up for? Oh, the grand final rehearsal on the Friday. And I've obviously got together and saw lots of Eurovision Hub teammates. And Liverpool was probably my favourite experience of a live Eurovision. I haven't had loads, you know, but even having it in Birmingham, because it's such a massive thing now, just the whole event, the atmosphere, the way it took over the city, the sun was shining, Liverpool did an amazing job. So who wouldn't want to be there? It was so lovely to have it back in the UK because, to be honest, I never thought it was going to happen again.
Yeah, it's amazing. Getting to attend twice in your own country. I could only dream.
Yes.
I was born.
You should have been. I was going to say you should have been born earlier. And then
I was alive for 96, but I was a baby. I was a baby. Too small. Alicia, Michelle, we probably can't count how many Eurovision events and Eurovision Song Contests and national finals you've been to. Like so many, you've been on the ground and covering. Could you pick a favorite?
Yeah, I would say 2016 was probably my favorite. And I think it was because everything felt like it was all happening in the same place. It felt like we were all together kind of the same time. I mean, I remember like Euro Fan Cafe, homegirl from Bulgaria, Polly Genova, was just like having a smoke, like with a beer, you know, just chilling by herself, like at a table. And then we're all sitting in like the little fan lounge area, which they also had karaoke nights like happening. So 2016 is probably like my favorite Eurovision in person experience. We were all like together. I remember like getting back every morning to like my apartment at like 5 a.m. and the sun was just shining very brightly. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever get that again. I hope so, though. I think that's why I keep coming back. I'm hoping that I will have that same experience again.
And Stockholm's such a cool city, right? Like they just know how to host things.
Yeah, it was fun and walkable. And we actually did get pretty decent weather, too, because, you know, the Nordics, it can be hit or miss. But we had a very, very like sunny days, pretty warm, pretty nice. So, yeah.
Do you think that was like the perfect mix of like this big, great event, but not so big as it's actually getting every year, that it allowed you to have that more homely feel? Do you think we can have that again?
I think that we could have it in the bubble. I think if Euro Club and kind of Fan Cafe decide to partner again and sort of have everything in the same space, mm-hmm. I mean, literally where the Euro Club and Euro Fan Cafe happened, it was the same place that they even did the red carpet opening, you know, ceremony. So I think that it is possible, but I don't knock the scale of Eurovision now. I appreciate, as an American, I appreciate the fact that it is going more global and it is getting bigger. And so I'm just like, okay, we just need a bigger tent. We just need to hitch up a bigger tent to fit all of us. But I do think that it is possible. But I'm optimistic. I'm an optimist, so...
Sorry, I was just going to say the timelines that they have is so small as well. Like when you think of big international events, it's very seldom that you get only a year to plan and execute something this big. Like what a massive job to put on these cities and the delegations, that they do a good job. But I can only imagine, especially in recent years with security issues popping up as well. I think that happened with Malmo a little bit. I noticed some things were cancelled or things were moved a few times right up until the very end from what I remember. So it must be crazy to look at that timeline and say, I've got to plan all of this in somewhere it possibly has never been before. And fit in. I still don't know how they're going to do it this year, but they always manage to come up with a great plan. But I don't envy the people who do the planning for this stuff, because it is some scale, as you say, Alicia, now, isn't it?
Yeah, cosine. It is. It's a big endeavor. And I love the fact that Eurovision is going more global and more people are discovering Eurovision. And I feel like different types of people are coming to Eurovision, coming into the fandom. And I feel like the benefit of that too is it changes kind of the diversity of music that we get, the diversity of genres. I like the fact that we're getting more native language, it seems, on a trend now. So as it's becoming more global, in some ways, it's even becoming more reflective of Europe too at the same time. So I think that's kind of a cool juxtaposition as well.
I mean, those were my heady days. That's what I loved about Eurovision, the fact that it did represent the different countries within Europe. And then that's when I sort of lost interest for a little while, when it became this homogenized English, you know, Europop thing of the noughties, that I literally did. I watched it, but I wasn't paying any attention. And it was only until recent years where they've started to actually go, hey, we're Europe, we've got this culture, we've got all this great songs and songwriters, let's actually reflect that rather than, as I say, this homogenized English thing. So I think that's wonderful. I'm really happy we're going back to being European again.
Totally. This has been really fun to like warm ourselves up, all the ladies, and of course International Women's Day. That's why we're all here. And Alicia, while you're here as well, we have to shout out your iconic Ladies Choice series that you host every May over on your YouTube channel. Just for any listeners who aren't aware, can you give a brief explanation of what that is?
Yeah, so I feel like when I first came into the space at Eurovision, the first person who actually came up to me was a woman and was American and was kind of like, hi, I actually really love your channel. And I mean, mind you, at that time, I'm getting 500 views and feeling like I have won. I'm like, 500 people watched this? And, you know, maybe it was even just for 5 minutes, but I was excited about it. And so I wanted to just create a little space for us to kind of say, we are here. There are some ladies here, just FYI. It's not just the guys running everything, you know, some of us are here, and just give us a space to kind of come together, connect and share our thoughts. And honestly, the response has been really positive to it. And so it's hard to think of a year when I'm planning out my program and kind of going, okay, I got to figure out when I can do Ladies' Choice. I got to figure out a time that works for everyone. So yeah.
It's always a real honor and a real highlight every May when you're hosting it, Alicia. And I love how you always have a different range of people taking part. It's super fun and such a good idea. We're all about it. We're going to cast our minds back a bit and think about like the history of the Eurovision Song Contest, because we're all big fans. And I'm conscious as well that we have a lot of younger listeners and we have younger female listeners. So it would be really cool to especially think about like pre-2000s Eurovision. And, you know, we're in 2025. Eurovision began in 1956. So the lives of so many women around the world is totally different to what we can even imagine back in those times. So it's interesting how Eurovision's reflective of, you know, for example, in Ireland in the 1950s, my grandmother had to give up working when she had her children. And that's just how it was. And I'm sure it's different in every country how those changes affected women. But Eurovision's always been an interesting reflection of what's going on in the world and what's going on in Europe. So we're going to cast our minds back and think about like iconic women in the Eurovision sphere. And we're just going to throw out some names and chat about them and just, I suppose, celebrate them. And for me, the first person who comes to mind is Liz Assia, of course, because she's the first Eurovision winner. She entered several times for Switzerland. And did you guys, I'm sure some of you know, she attempted to come back again in the 2000s for Switzerland. I suggest you check it out. She was performing with a rap group in 2012, and she really should have gone. A really kind of interesting woman in the Eurovision scene, and she passed away in 2018. Another person I'd love to throw out, and feel free to throw out more if you guys think of any, France Gall, who went previously for Luxembourg. She kind of has an interesting link to Luxembourg's entry this year. What are you guys making of that?
Right, I didn't know that she was connected to it, but obviously the name of the song. And I was like, is this a deliberate connection? So
yes.
Enlighten me, please, because I haven't paid attention.
I like gave Connor a mini history lesson on the podcast about this, so I won't go into it in as much detail. But essentially, France Gall received like really poor treatment from her male songwriter during the process of Eurovision and then after. And he was very, I suppose, cruel towards her and used his power to, I suppose, exploit her career in not a respectful manner. And she spoke about it years later about how, you know, his whole presence around Eurovision really kind of tinged her experience at the Eurovision Song Contest, her dealings with this man, with this songwriter. And she never wanted to sing Poupée de Sang again. And she didn't want anything to do with it. She said all of this in a biography about him. And the performer this year, Laura from Luxembourg, a young teacher from Luxembourg, has kind of reinvented Poupée de Sang, Poupée de Sang to her current song to kind of, I suppose, honour France Gall as an earlier Luxembourgish entry. She had a picture of her on the LED and everything. So I thought that was really cool.
Can I go with the first woman who affected me was Nicole from Germany. In 1982, I'm Bisschen Frieden, and I will tell you exactly why. So I was eight, and I can literally picture myself sitting in front of the television when she came to do the reprise at the end. And she came out, she's playing a guitar, and she's singing in German. And then she immediately went into English, and then she went into French, and then she went into Dutch. So basically, she split her winning song into four different languages. And eight-year-old me sat there spellbound and went, "This is bloody amazing." Not that I said that, obviously, because I was 8 years old. But I just went, I remember going, this, I loved the song anyway. But the fact she came out and sang that in four languages, I would actually credit her for the reason why I then became a linguist and went on to study languages. So she had a major effect on me. So thank you, Nicole.
Well, I might rewind us a little bit, but But then I'll fast forward us. So if I rewind, so France Gall, I love that song. And like, honestly, all the other music that she came out with. And it's interesting that she had the experience that she did, because I mean, she was a teenager. Like, this was not like a grown woman. And so it's interesting, because now at Eurovision, we talk a little bit about like, do we need to make the age a little bit older for folks at Eurovision? Because it's a lot of pressure. And for her even to have that experience in the 60s, and then we fast forward to now and some of these performers that are young and kind of going through this, it's like we might want to rethink that. But I want to shout out for the UK folks. What is it? Sadie Shaw? Sandy Shaw, Puppet on a String. Everybody knows that that is my jam. Okay. I have that come up when I'm feeling low. Like, so the first time I ever heard the song, it was actually performed by like a Calypso band. I had no clue that this was like an actual Eurovision like song. And so this is one of the songs that I say, like, I had all these moments to figure out what Eurovision was, if I had had Google at the time, maybe, but we didn't have smartphones or Google. So like there were all these moments in my life where I was kind of exposed to a Eurovision song and not really knowing that I was. So yeah, shout out to her, because Puppet on a String, Barefoot. But I would say like my favorite, and then I have to go back and talk a little bit, like Ofer Hazah has a voice that just the minute I hear her sing, like I start crying. Like it doesn't matter what the song is. Like I just feel like her voice, there's such a richness to it. It's something soulful. And I feel like there's something like ancestral, like just when she like opens her mouth and sings whatever, she could be singing Happy Birthday. And it would just pull me to tears. So also shouting out Ofer Hazah, which 70s. So I rewound a little bit and then fast forwarded us to the 70s. Okay.
So I'm going to take a bit of a different approach on this question, because I am self-admittedly probably the worst person with Eurovision history that you could possibly get on a podcast. I'm leaving it for my future self to like dive into all of this beautiful history, because I know I probably will go back like many did in 2020, right? I think a lot of people went back and rewatched a lot of the old contests, which I still need to do. So the person, now I do love Dana, I have to say, Irish winner. Like she was only 18 years old at the time. And when you do watch that video, she's so sweet. And there's something so innocent and, yeah, just really beautiful about that song that I do have to mention. But I'm going to go a slightly different route. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Rebecca Talon de Havilland. If you haven't heard of her, you probably actually haven't, especially if you're an international listener. But to give you a bit of background on her, she is actually one of the first people, I believe the first trans woman in Ireland to get an Irish passport. So she got her sex changed on her passport to become a female back in 1991. And she's become a huge advocate internationally in the UK a lot, actually, for working with HIV, living with HIV herself, and for trans activism as well. So she is quite a well-known name. She's on TV. She has a TV show talking about being different on Virgin Media, which is one of our big channels over here. But crazy thing about her is she actually got her start in Eurovision back in the 80s. So she started working as a hairstylist to the stars. And by stars, I mean Johnny Logan. She was working on that team, which is like incredible. So she has gone on to have this like amazing history. And do look her up after this if you're listening, because she is like a fantastic person and she shared her story online. But I just think that is an incredible start to have, to be working back in the days, like the heyday for Ireland, really, when we were at our best. And she went on to work in PR and to have an amazing career, but also be an activist as well. But I just thought, yeah, that was something maybe a little bit different. Someone working behind the scenes who we maybe haven't heard of, but who's also really inspirational as well. So, yeah, I thought she is fantastic, too. And of course, intersectionality is really important as well when it comes to women's rights and the different experiences that women have in the world. So yeah, I thought that was something interesting.
Could I piggyback on that? Because I do think Eurovision is a space where we've seen how women from all walks of life have used this platform to really make a difference. And if you ask me, like, the first Eurovision kind of winner, I mean, a lot of people will talk about Loreen, but I always say, like, I don't know if we would have gotten a Loreen, like, at Eurovision if we had not had Just Maybe I'm Crazy. The Wolf's Been Running.
Ruslana. Yeah.
Ruslana from Ukraine. I mean, like, this woman was a singer. And also, too, with Ruslana, older, I think a lot of people, if you watch that performance, you're thinking, like, this is some, like, you know, 22-year-old, like, getting on the stage, like, homegirl was grown, got on the stage, performed, walked on that stage. I've rewatched that year. And it's, like, the way she walks out, it's, like, there is nobody else winning tonight. This is the winner. Like, we're watching it right now. And basically turned that into a role where, I mean, she became this humanitarian, this stateswoman. So it's like the Eurovision to change maker, like, pipeline is a very real thing. Just had to drop
that.
Yeah,
because we had that run, like, we had Helena Paparizou and, like, all of those ladies in the early 2000s, which really improved that quality of Eurovision from, like, what, 2003 onwards. I also want to shout out, like, Dana International's participation and win in 1998, Katie, I think was so important for visibility in the contest and just, you know, showcasing diversity. And it's also just a bop of a song as well that still goes off on Eurovision nights out. And also Sandra Kim, 13-year-old winner from Belgium. Like, they had to change the rules because of her. I know they also lied, though, didn't they? They didn't disclose her actual age. They said she was slightly older.
Eurovision lore? Are we getting some Eurovision tea?
I think they had her down as 16, and then eventually it came out that, no, she had been 13 when she performed.
I think I've got in my head that she was 15, but obviously you've now told me she was 13, so obviously I was told a lie, because I was a similar age. I can't do the maths right now. I was a similar age around that, so I just thought that was immense. I mean, I put her video on my VHS over and over and over. I learned the whole dance. So for me to be that age and have someone representing a country that was also a similar age, I thought that was amazing. So as much as now I'm grown up, do I think it's a great thing now? Probably not, because of the intense scrutiny and hatred and, you know, some of the horrible things that happened being part of Eurovision. But at the time, back, there was no social media, there was no hatred. It was like you went, you sang your song, everyone loved it, and you went home again. Yay, bye.
You're right, Katie. So, it's on Eurovision TV, on the website. The winner was 13-year-old Sandra Kim. She had actually told the producer she was 15 years old when she was actually 13.
I was going to say 15 was what I thought, but okay. Yeah.
Ooh,
Celine Dion as well, guys. Like,
yeah, we've got to mention Celine.
I'm telling you, the minute Switzerland won, actually maybe not even when they won, because I think I might have even said this in my reaction, that I was like, look, y'all, but if Switzerland wins, then we get Celine back, okay? Like, we get Celine, we need it to happen. I am living, I mentioned earlier, in the optimism, maybe adjacent to delusion. I am living in the world that we are going to have a Celine Dion appearance this year at Eurovision. It need happen in some capacity. I don't care what capacity. It need happen. And I believe that it will.
I mean, they made the ABBA avatars. Is that the right word? They made that happen. So, I mean, if Celine, I know, hasn't been well, she might not have the time, but they can do something, Alicia. I agree with you.
Celine was at the Olympics, okay? Eurovision is at the same level.
Yeah.
Eurovision is at the same level, okay? So if she could make the Olympics work, I am believing, okay? It's worth it, girl. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah. I hope so.
It's International Women's Day, which is why we have an international panel. But also, this is the Eurovision podcast. And Alex has mentioned Dana, but I want to shout out our other iconic female winners from Ireland, because like Linda Martin, Niamh Kavanagh, Eimear Quinn, if you guys watched Eurosong and you saw their incredibly camp performance of Tattoo by Loreen, I hope you enjoyed it. Like, Irish women, can I just say, Irish women.
Like, we were, myself and Michal were crying with both like joy and laughter and just general enjoyment. Mm-hmm. That performance was everything. Like, three absolute queens on that stage. Love them. And they're also unique in their own way as well, and brought something different, didn't they?
Yeah,
they are. They're very different. I mean, that, again, their time was my peak time. So, it, you know, the 90s and me watching it and putting it on VHS, as I say, and rewatching it through the year, because that was the only way that you could carry on listening to Eurovision, because there were no CDs, there was no YouTube, there was nothing. I mean, it literally was another world. So I've still got a stack of VHS, Eurovision 1995. So, and yeah, and Ireland were just kept coming back and winning. Wonderful times.
Quick fire question, girl.
Gonna happen again, guys.
Fingers crossed. Quick fire question. Female Eurovision hosts, talk to me. I mean, there's a few obvious choices, but who are you?
Petra.
It's got to be Petra.
Petra, come on. Yes. Start and finish. Okay. Yeah. No. I mean, no shade to the other ladies, but you know, when you are the best at your craft, you deserve all the shine.
Yeah.
For being the best at your craft. But I would say runner up, Hannah.
Yeah. Hannah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a natural. Bring me somebody from the theater, give them a microphone, put them in some sequins, and roll the camera. It's going to be a show.
Wasn't that one of her first presenting gigs? Am I wrong in that?
Yes. Well, like as far as I'm aware, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a bit of a off-the-wall choice for them. Like, they took a bit of a risk with her, but, oh, dear God, did it pay off. It was sensational. And I love when you feel comfortable with the presenter and you don't even get any nerves. You think anything could happen, but she's going to do it with such confidence and she's going to pass it off as if it was all going to plan anyway. But, she was just fantastic.
We do often get a bit of secondhand anxiety, don't we? Like, and a bit of secondhand cringe. And Hannah just gave me none of that. And I think especially because it was coming to the UK, and we know people can be, well, to be fair, the Eurovision fans can be quite critical full stop. But I always feel as a UK fan, we will definitely get an extra little dig. So when I knew that Hannah was doing it, I was like, yes, this is amazing. And even like Alicia, I thought she did a great job. And when she just stood up and did that rap, I was like, okay, this is good. Yeah. So yeah, I was very proud, very proud.
People. I also loved, hated the Austrian girlies with Conchita flying in the air. Cause you know, tonight we're building bridges. Like, it was just so unnecessary and camp, but I kind of loved it. For all the wrong reasons. And the Portuguese girls, the four of them.
I was about to bring up Portugal.
Filomena was great.
Yeah, they're memorable. Yeah,
Filomena is, I think, like, when Portugal wins again, because I do believe that Portugal will be winning Eurovision soon again, I think in the next 5 years, if they keep kind of going where they're going with the selection, I think we need to just give Filomena the Petra treatment. Full stop. Like, she can do it solo. I'm fine with that. If they want to tack, you know, some slightly mediocre dude with her, no shade, Mons. Okay, no shade to that man. No. If they want to tack someone on to her, I'm like, the joke was right there. The joke was right there. Okay, had to do it. But no, if they want to tack on like some other person to host with Filomena, but I really think she has that Petra energy that could just hold down the stage and do it solo. Yeah, I'm with it.
Absolutely. And entries, guys, like, songs with feminist message, like female empowerment, like we've had so many over the years. For me, a really recent entry that comes to mind is Ukraine last year was just stunning. And then conversely, kind of like, you know, a country that's no longer in it, Russian Woman was...
I was about to say Russian Woman.
A cool showcase, wasn't it? It really was.
Mm.
Other entries that come to mind, My Sister's Crown.
You know what? Yes, My Sister's Crown was so good, wasn't it? Like, that was just female empowerment bop. And you know what? People didn't have much faith in it that year going forward. We won't mention anyone in particular, Lou, but, you know, they know who these people are. But they, like, that staging was amazing. They were so powerful. I loved the sisterhood on stage. And they did really well in the end, right? So, yeah, I love that entry. But to be honest, when I think of women in Eurovision, okay, like modern Eurovision, I have to shout out the powerful dancers and queens that we've had on the stage. Fuego with Eleni. I love Slow-Mo still to this day. Chanel. Okay, look, I know it maybe wasn't like saying so much in the words, but the dance moves, the stage, the presence, like what an absolute superstar. And I just thought it was really cool to see a woman hold her own on the stage, take power of her sexuality, who she is, and, you know, march those men around that stage and tell them what to do. And yeah, give the best vocals of those kind of songs. I watched it recently and I was like, I still don't think anyone will come close to this for a while, particularly, and I bring this up all the time, I know we've had lots of dance breaks, lots of divas, lots of this genre, but she's genuinely the only one who can fit in the high notes after that full dance break. Like, I'm not going to mention other acts, but a lot of them will front load the singing and then get to the dancing part. But I just thought, what a fantastic showcase of female vocals, dancing, and like every single second counted. So when I think of women in Eurovision, I do think, I just love when they eat up that stage and bring everything. Because sorry to the guys, but they just don't do it like the girls when it comes to that, those absolute diva dancey songs. So yeah, I love the divas myself.
What about, I'm going to throw it back to the 90s again. Mm-hmm. Azucar Moreno. And I don't know if you remember, they were the Spanish entry that year, and they came on looking fierce. You know, they've got the flamenco scrape back hair and they're in the black, and basically there was a problem with the backing track, and they like stood there and they were like, right, no, I'm not starting this, and they just walked off and like went, no, I'm off. And then it would happen or how it would happen now, because I know there's rules and regulations, but literally they just started the whole thing again and just came out and went, yes, do you know what I mean? It was like pure Spanish diva vibes. It was great. And yeah, so I'm gonna call them out.
Okay, I gotta call in a good way.
In a good way,
I gotta call out my girls. I'm Mrs. Thumb, 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 Vina, Thumb, 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 Hurricane. Hi, Devuni, Loco. I love a girl group moment. I really, really do. And I am shocked at Eurovision that we don't get more. Like, I actually am surprised that we don't get more girl groups. Obviously, the UK is giving us a girl group moment this year, which we'll see. But it's not like the girl group, you know, where I say it lovingly, but like that, I want to get down to the club. I want to drop it like it's low and I want to hit it. I just really, that was a moment. And then I would also say, remember North Macedonia, Tamada's song in 2019, Proud.
Oh, gosh, yeah. How did I forget that? That's beautiful.
I mean, that was like a moment. And I think the fact that it won the jury. Remember, because it was like the points were all weird, so she never got the moment that it was like she actually won the jury. Everyone thought that it was Sweden that year, Jan Lundvik, but it was her, and it was this surprising moment at this sort of apt time, I think, in the world too, when that moment kind of happened. And although, like, I think the music video was a little bit on the nose, the way that she delivered that live, I mean, baby, come on. Yes, yes.
Can I just say, I was just going to add to that, in that I can't believe I forgot her, because in the run-up to that contest, she didn't enter my sphere. And I don't know why. That song just did not enter. That night, it entered. And for months and months later, I had that on repeat. And I would stand in front of my mirror and I would like try and sing it to my daughter. And I wanted her to absorb these words. They are amazing words from a mother to a daughter. So thanks for bringing that one up, because I think that's definitely worth a mention.
And Destiny, I just want to just drop it. Jimacast.
Jimacast, great.
I'm done.
On Pride by Tara, this is like a talking point I've wanted to talk about with a group of female fans for years, and it's just popped into my head. I don't know if you remember at the time, Twitter's always a cesspit of complaining and whatever, and I don't know if this was female fans complaining or not, but people at the time were taking issue with Proud because it was an all-male writing team on that song. But, you know, the song promotes female empowerment. And I don't know if it was women complaining, or I don't remember it being women complaining. How do you guys feel about that?
I wasn't aware, but as a woman, I don't really care, because a woman sang it, a woman delivered it, it resonated with me. It resonated with me as a woman. I would have liked someone to have said those words to me. And as I say, as a mother, for me to impart those words with my daughter are amazing, you know. And it, and when you're singing it to yourself in front of the mirror, I tell you, you should do it every single morning, because it makes your shoulders go back and it makes you want to go out into the day. So I don't actually care who wrote it, who produced it, or who did anything behind the scenes, because the end message is great. It's great for us, for women. So yeah, that's my opinion. Quite passionate, I appear.
I have to say, I mean, at some point we have to give space to allyship. I think the critique is fair. Like, I think it's a fair critique, but like, what is allyship then? You know, that, and I'll leave it at that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with that, I think. Also, one I'd love to shout out is Krista Siegfried's Marry Me, 2013. She had like the all-female kiss, and only a year after that Finland legalized same-sex marriage, which is actually really, really cool to have that follow-up to her Eurovision entry. Taya and Selena released their song Who the Hell is Edgar on International Women's Day, and they put a really good spotlight on the music industry and you know, the discrepancy between streaming stats and how artists make money off their craft and all of that kind of thing. Molly Dva, 2007. Maria is so iconic. I nearly feel bad in this discussion, because I think I'll think of 10 more songs later on with amazing messages and empowerment.
Not enough time. Yeah.
I think now we're actually, at first I went, oh, I can't think of one. And now that we're actually starting to talk, I'm like, and there's this one, and there's this one, and there's this one. So apologies to anyone we're leaving out. It literally just like, there's not enough time.
We should also recognize that today, on the day of recording, the UK have announced Remember Monday, all girl group. Katie, I don't know, are you willing to share your thoughts, given you're from the UK?
Yes. Right. Not normally a fan of the UK entry, I am not gonna lie, which is why my favorite is generally from 1998. So look, first listen I was a bit, oh, this is interesting, and then this afternoon I've walked my dog in the park in the sunshine, and I've listened to it on repeat, and now I am like, I actually really like it, because I think, one, I love some of the lyrics. I think they've actually taken some like really key like British phrases, like clutch my pearls and sip my tea. And even to the point where it says jump off a roof into a pool, I was thinking Spanish hoteliers are going to be like, yeah, that's what the Brits do. They go on the balconies, they get pissed and they jump in the pool. So we've actually included quite iconic British lyrics, which I didn't hear obviously at first. I like the fact it is a bit different for the UK. I know it's still pop. We don't seem to veer off pop very well. But a girl group, it's been a long time, correct me if I'm wrong because my brain is fuzzy, that we've had a girl group. And I like this mix of, like, it's like current pop. So you've got Sabrina Carpenter and Chapel Roan type style, maybe mixed with a bit of Little Mix. We've also got this like throwback, because it's not particularly current in many ways. You've got a throwback to like some kind of rock opera Queen, like theatre production. So if they stage it well, and if these women can actually sing the harmonies that they sound like they can sing, I at least think we've got a quality song. Does that make sense? I'm not going to say it's going to rush up to the top of everyone's top three, but all I ever want from the UK is just to feel proud and feel that we've entered a good quality song. I'm happy with this. I'm actually quite intrigued to see what happens.
Absolutely. We love a girl group. The last thing we want to discuss, and like a topic that's very close to my heart, and I know, Alex, this is something we chat about quite a bit, and Alicia, Katie, I'm dying to know your thoughts. Alicia, I feel like we've spoken about it a little bit before too. Our place as women in the Eurovision community, you know, the fan community is definitely male dominated. Like, I always joke that the ladies' bathroom is like next to empty sometimes on Eurovision nights out. What are your feelings as women in the fan community? What have your experiences on the whole been like?
I think it's important to note that on the whole, I think like my experiences have obviously been positive. I'm still here somehow. I'm still here. And I really do think we have a beautiful, diverse, really open community as a whole. I think if you find yourself on X, it might feel a little bit more isolating and scary, but that is not real. You know, I'm sorry. That's not a real space. When we are in real life and engaging and interacting with each other, it is largely positive, loving. And I think we are united in our shared love of this thing called the Eurovision Song Contest. And I think that that's really important to keep top of mind. And I will also say, at times it can feel like imposter syndrome is real. You feel like, whoa. And, you know, and me, in contrast to some other folks who are creators, I mean, I've worked in music radio, I've performed before in front of crowds on television and stuff like that. Katie, we have a place called the Apollo Theater. It's like in New York, it's famous because they can boo you. So not only is it broadcasted like on television, people in the audience are allowed to boo. So I did that when I was 17 and 18, so twice. So even though I have like somewhat of a resume, I still oftentimes am like, what am I doing here? No one cares what I have to think. Like, I'm not being valued here. Like, no one cares. But, you know, that's more in my head. And it isn't necessarily what my real life experience is. So I have to tell myself, get out of your head and get back in reality. Because in reality, like, I do think we have a very vibrant and open and welcoming community.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the real life Eurovision community is so very different to the online Eurovision community. And it's funny that you mentioned that, Lou, because I don't think I've ever particularly noticed that I'm a woman in like this predominantly male space. I think more than anything, I probably notice more my age compared to the average fan nowadays. You know, I'm in my 50s. I've been watching Eurovision since the 1970s, for God's sake. You know, and you do get ageist comments and like, oh yeah, what's the granny know? And oh no, I was the Alzheimer's patient and stuff like that, which doesn't bother me in the slightest. You know, I'm really proud of my age. So they think it's abuse and it doesn't bother me. But yeah, I notice my age more than I probably notice the fact that I'm a woman in this area, really more. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to echo, I suppose, what you both said, that it definitely, in real life, like, I've had amazing experiences, but I won't lie, like, it definitely was shocking to me. I think the first time I went to a real life event, it was actually the pre-party in Amsterdam back in about 2021. I went, and like, I was brand new. Like, all I knew was wee blogs and a couple of tweets here and there. I had not been in the community before, and it genuinely was shocking to me that it was so male dominated. It maybe that was on me though, because I just did not expect it. But then at the same time, I have to acknowledge my privilege as well, because I would say this community is probably the first time I've ever felt like different, and like the absolute minority, which, like, what a privilege to have, honestly, in my life, that I went, oh, like, I'm not like the average person here. And it gives me perspective on what that's like for other people as well, what it's like for the queer community to be in rooms and feel that about other people, to feel that they're different. So I have to acknowledge that. But at the same time, you do have the odd experience here and there where someone does make a comment, or you are in a group and you feel that you're just not listened to or not valued because, you know, you're not who they're interested in or, you know, there to talk to. So, yeah, it's definitely mainly positive. But myself and Louise, like, we would often talk about the odd experience here or there where we might feel a bit just isolated a bit, or that our thoughts aren't taken into account. But then again, I have to talk about, like, I've had so many amazing experiences. Again, one I call to in Amsterdam, I traveled there, actually just gone for the Het Groot Festival. It was my first time ever going, and I walked into the bar to meet the rest of the OJE Irish team that were there, and I was the only female that had gone on the trip. I had no idea until I was there. It was like me and like 15, 16 guys, and they were so kind to me the whole trip, and looked after me and made sure, like, they kept saying, Alex, can you see, like, you go to the front. And I was like, I'm so thankful that I have these lovely people looking after me, because you don't get that everywhere. And there was a couple of scary experiences as well on the trip, because there were some football matches going on next to the concert, and it was like some pretty awful stuff going on, like homophobia, very blatantly actually, on the transport. And again, everyone rallied around each other. So literally, the community is amazing, and we really, it was like a family on that trip. So yeah, I'm very, very thankful for how the majority treat me and treat my fellow ladies. But yeah, you do also have to acknowledge the odd time you do go, did you just not listen to me there, or do you not respect my opinion because, you know, I'm not one of the guys? But as I said, I have to recognize that is not the biggest problem in the world, is it? I know, Louise, you feel it as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you've said there, Alex. And very briefly from me, like, when I first joined the Eurovision online space in 2018, and this is no disrespect to any of the other fan sites who I'm sure were doing a great job and working really hard, but I just kept seeing panels of men on these videos, and I wasn't seeing myself. And also on top of that, I wasn't seeing many Irish creators either at the time. And when I found Eurovision Hub and I saw Alicia and I saw Leonie from Australia and other people, I just thought, oh, wow, okay, this is cool. And then Katie, we were lucky enough to get involved like around the same time, I think we joined. And yeah, I just think, like, big shout out to Micheál and what he did with Eurovision Hub in bringing more diversity in, like YouTube reactors and stuff. That was really cool for me to see. And Alex and I have this like mini pact when we're on Eurovision Nights Out together. Whenever one of us finds a new like female friend, we go and grab the other. Yeah. We're like, wait till you meet Alex, because we're just like collecting these female friends where we go, we're trying to make a little crew, because it's just nice, you know, like sometimes you're like, I just need a tampon or like whatever it is, you know. But yeah,
and there is that safety, right, on especially on nights out in nightclubs and things like this. Like, it's sad, but at times you do feel safer sometimes just to go to a woman and say, do you have a tampon, or I'm not feeling safe right now, can you stay with me? And that has happened on nights out, even in Eurovision nights out, and with some of my friends, where you do need to, you know, go outside with them or check in on them. So yeah, it's really nice having other female friends in the community.
Yeah, it is. It's important. And just flipping back to Michal, I remember one of my like initial emails to him was, "You need an older person representing." That was literally, I was like, "Look, I've been a fan for 40 years. You need me. Oh, and you need old people." He did actually already have an older person, but she wasn't there very often. So I took the place of being the nana of Eurovision Hub now. So,
But Katie, you're right. Michal did need you.
I think I'm the longest one there now.
Are you really? You know? Oh, that's cool.
Not that I'm around much this year, but yeah, I think. Yeah, if you look at the spreadsheet now, I'm the longest.
Yeah,
I would have not in terms of number of videos, but in terms of like year started, still bloody here. It's me.
Good for you, girl. I really wanted to have Danny on this call, but just time wise, 4 a.m. in Australia, yeah. I couldn't do it to her. But big shout out to
She'd
Danny.
Have done it though, wouldn't she?
Yeah,
big. That's the thing. She'd have been like, "I'll be up. I'll get up. It's fine."
It's only that I know she did it 2 nights ago for a different call, and I felt so bad for her. And she was so tired. So big love to Danny.
I know.
I'm
constantly, it's like I'm her mother and I'm like, I see that she's still up and I'm like, "Danny, get to sleep. You need sleep." Yeah. She's like, "All right, mother." I'm like, yeah.
We're all looking out for each other.
Yeah.
Well, yes. We're going to wrap it up here. I think this has been so much fun. We're wishing everybody a very happy International Women's Day. Whoever is listening, thanks so much for dipping in. This was a lot of fun, a bit of a novelty episode. And Katie, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been an absolute pleasure to come and join in all things like Eurovision. It was good. Thank you.
Absolutely. And big shout out to Alicia, who's just dipped out. We really appreciate her time. And that is all for now, so thanks for listening.
And there we have it. What a fantastic chat with Alicia and Katie. I mean, two absolute icons in their own right. First of all, Alicia, absolute queen. I love, like, her content is amazing. I know you guys are long-term fans as well of her, and has such a big presence in the community. So amazing to see all of the work that she does. And then Katie as well. What a lovely lady. And I really liked, like, a lot of the points she made. I probably haven't seen Katie as much, but I have met her on Nights Out and she is wonderful and had some really good insights, I think, in the conversation, particularly when she mentioned, we asked, of course, about, you know, being a woman in the community. And I thought it was so interesting and such a great point to talk about age as well. And that really ties into being a woman as well, really well, that it is something that as you get older, and we all will get older, how people kind of view you in certain spaces or treat you different. Again, it's one of those things that you might not realize is a privilege until you're in that position. And then you go, "Oh yeah, like being even a young woman is a privilege in itself." So I thought, yeah, they were both fantastic conversationalists and brought so much. And I loved, yeah, hearing their opinions. What about you, Lou?
Yeah, it was so much fun. It was just so nice to do that with a couple of more voices added to the conversation. And like, I just have so much time for the two of them always. And to be honest, like, there were so many wonderful women we could have had in this conversation. You know, we could fill a whole series, I think, with them. Amazing women in the Eurovision sphere, and I was so grateful to have the two of them there for that. And yeah, such good points brought up and such fun things discussed. And yeah, it's just a really cool thing to do, I think, to mark International Women's Day in this Eurovision context. And we hope that you, the listeners, enjoyed it. And I mean, quite cool that International Women's Day is falling on a national final Saturday. Hope you guys enjoy it, whatever you're doing. I'm sure a lot of people might be watching a certain national final in another country, perhaps. Portugal will be picking as well. San Marino will be picking tonight. So if you're listening on the day of release on the Saturday, hope you're going to enjoy those. And yeah, hope you've enjoyed this episode on the whole. Alex, my love, thanks so much for doing this with me. Will the listeners hear us together again soon, do you reckon? Cad is cheapam tú?
Oh, cheapam go mai rud ar siúl le cúpla seachtaine. Yeah, big ug féchaint timpel.
Cúpla le lé beidir. Yeah, brachan sé. Agus beidir go mbeidh sé seanga eile, níl is agam cad atá ann ach beidir. So yeah, you might have heard another bit of language there. Keep your ears and eyes.
Yeah, you might have heard my shocking Irish there. My apologies to any proper Gaelgors out there, because I am out of college like 4 years now, so things are getting rusty up in here. But look, what is it? Bear tear no.
As far bear as far Gaelga Brisha no Berla Clista.
Mm-hmm. Broken Irish is better than perfect English.
Exactly.
And damn true. So there's going to be some, you know, Gaelga Brisha on that episode, but look out for it.
Looking forward to the Gaelga Brisha. That's a good way to brand it, Alex. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. But thank you so much for listening today. Make sure you stay tuned with us so you don't miss a thing. We also have a ton of countries to catch up on, as Connor and I pointed out in our recent episode. So we're going to get there, guys. Just bear with us. If you're looking to follow where we are in the meantime, hopefully you already know, but we are mostly active on Instagram at AirVision Podcast. We're on Blue Sky now. We're on YouTube. Lots of good video content on there if you want to check it out. We're AirVision Pod on X if anybody is still there. You can find us on Facebook, all over the works. Make sure if you listen to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts that you give us a rating, and that helps other Eurovision fans to find us. Recommend us to your friends in this Eurovision season. Share our posts, interact with our all fun question boxes online, and you can also send us an email if that's your preferred method of communication. airvisionpodcast@gmail.com. That is a mouthful, but here we are, International Women's Day. Gals, pals, have a great day. And lots of love from all of us here at the AirVision Podcast. All we have to say for now, Alex, is
slán go fóinn.